You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Providence Journal has the story, and that is that Governor McKee, now they're requesting more time to hand over documents to the feds. So right now, apparently, the feds are giving the Rhode Island DOT and the McKee administration more time to produce Washington Bridge records. Story by Patrick Anderson, giving them a little extra time. They had last month set a deadline that it was supposed to be, I believe, this week, actually, on Monday. But instead, they verbally have agreed to extend it. And now all of this is leading up till March 18th. And what this has to do with, they're investigating false claims made to receive payment for construction, repair, inspection on the West Brown Bridge. And that continues to obviously be a disaster and nightmare. Now, we also have the Johnston Sunrise. You know, they have been doing an excellent job, and they're really the ones that set things in motion regarding the situation with Attorney General Peter Noronha going on the record regarding this situation with ICE. And they have a new update now. In a rare stinging rebuke of state officials by an enforcement wing of the federal government. It was, actually. And that is with ICE, where they released and they're going after the McKee administration for releasing someone undocumented, child molestation felony charges. And they write, was this a matter of policy or terrible error? Well, ICE has responded saying they're not sorry and they stand by their initial criticism that sparked and ignited the whole story. So now, Governor McKee this week still has not responded. Actually, he hasn't exactly been available. So we'll see at some point someone can get a microphone in front of him. He also said he was having the state police investigate this. So, but let's go to the Johnston Sunrise story. McKee office provided Rhode Island Division of Sheriff's incident report last April 2023. And they say they received a phone call saying that the immigrant illegal from Guatemala child molester had posted $50,000 bail. But ICE had a detainer lodged at the prison. So this seems to be semantics where they're saying, well, he's at the courthouse. If they had just sent him back to the prison, then ICE had a detainer there. So the McKee people are playing it fast and loose, saying, oh, they only had it at the prison. They didn't have it at the courthouse. Well, that's because the McKee people did not inform ICE that he was about to, you know, he was making bail and then was still, in fact, at the courthouse. So that's what it seems to come down to. Now, the McKee people, Governor McGreed, his people say, oh, our hands were tied. We weren't ignoring the detainer. The detainer pertained to the ACI. He was at the courthouse at the time. Well, it's the same thing. The sheriff's report to Governor McKee. Folks, with all of this, I want to come back to the background is February 6th, there's an arrest of a Guatemalan national charge, sexual assault to Rhode Island. Now, that was just this month. February 15th, they call out the ACI, where they say he'd been detained and said they ignored the detainer, meaning the ACI. ICE is making these accusations, and they released him. So the warden at the ACI referred request to comment to Chief Information Officer PR at the prison, who provided an official statement on Monday, February 19th, and says the inmate was discharged from the court, not from the ACI. Later that day, the ACI confirmed they still follow the 2014 Chafee policy, which says to ignore the ICE detainee. That's the bottom line. So the McKee people trying to say, oh, he was released because he was at the courthouse. No. Even if he had been released back to the prison, they still ignore the ICE orders. So here it is. Governor McKee still has not answered the question regarding, is he following the 2014 Chafee, now Governor Chafee executive order, saying from going forward, we're not going to follow direction from ICE. Now, the case is next scheduled pretrial conference on March 13th. Now, Attorney General Peter Noronha, his office revealed they had argued the case to try to keep him in custody. But it came down to Governor McKee was insisting this guy get released. And then there's been a little bit of a war of words. But this is, I think, the best way to sum this up. Now, in the Sunrise story, they asked the question, is Rhode Island a sanctuary state? ACLU, Stephen Brown, who helped to persuade Governor Chafee to issue the 2014 directive, which basically moved Rhode Island into sanctuary state, said, we agree with the governor and that the criticism aimed at his office by ICE Attorney General is unwarranted. Now, again, what do you expect the ACLU to do? Meaning, what do you expect them to say is what I meant to say. It's worth emphasizing that this is an incident that took place and they were concerned it was a flight risk, but the judge was proven right. That's not the point. That is absolutely not the point. And Governor McKee needs to realize what side he's on, which is he's with the ACLU. And the ACLU was with Governor Chafee saying, ignore ICE and don't detain these people, even though they put a federal detainer on him. And instead, just release them. Don't keep them in custody. And it was also last week that both House Minority Leader Mike Chippendale and Senate Minority Leader Jessica de la Cruz issued a joint statement, said Governor McKee needs to reveal his plan should a large group of illegals arrive at our doorstep. And what about the fact Rhode Island's status as a sanctuary state? And it is a sanctuary state. So now the article also has the mayor of Johnston, Mayor Joseph Polisena Jr. He basically said McKee is trying to deflect blame. Times of crisis, all he does is try to deflect blame, whether it's the Washington Bridge. There's a quote now. The insane Pawtucket Soccer Stadium deal. This lapse with the illegal. Governor McKee should channel his efforts into implementing strategic measures. Polisena called McKee the Bailey Zappi of governors, more third-string quarterback than team coach. Wow. Boom. Mic drop. Again, you can read the story in the Johnston Sunrise. Folks, you're listening to the John DePietro Show. The Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. Lunch, dinner, drinks in the lounge, especially this time of year. So much going on. They always have a nice crowd right there. Full bar, large dining area right there in the lounge. Easy to get to, whether it's lunch or dinner. A great meal is waiting for you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery. Think of this, since 1994. That's right, celebrating the big anniversary this year. I'll see you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. Folks, you're listening to the John DePietro Show. It's time for our legal segment. Joining us right now, he is our legal expert, one of Rhode Island's top attorneys. It is attorney Tim Dodd. And Tim, let's start off with, and I caught some of this yesterday, uncomfortable to say the very least. This is the Fannie Willis trial that's taking place right now in Georgia. It's a very serious case, RICO charges against President Trump. But the person that she was apparently in a relationship with, his attorney was on the stand. So it was a lawyer on the stand, but it was at times difficult to watch.
This case keeps taking the most unusual twists and turns. You're right, John. This is the case where Fannie Willis, the prosecutor, hires an attorney, Nathan Wade. Now, the question is, did they engage or commence a romantic relationship after she hired him, or were they engaged in a relationship before? The central question being, In addition to that issue, did Willis benefit? Because when Wade gets hired now, he has money that he's being paid to be a part of the prosecution team, and arguably some of that money he was using to take Fannie Willis on trips and kind of lavish vacations. She has claimed a bit preposterously that she paid for everything herself because she always has big amounts of cash on hand because that's what her dad raised her to believe she should be doing. Of course, there's no record of where she acquired or accumulated these sums of cash. She doesn't have bank records that she was at least able to produce showing where she might have taken cash out. She claims she accumulated it because if she went to the public supermarket, she'd pay with a check for more than what the groceries cost, and she'd get cash back as change. It kind of tests really her credibility. Yesterday, in court, the attorney for Nathan Wade, who was also his law partner, this guy named Terrence Bradley, testified that he was Wade's law partner for 10 years, and for a period of time, he represented Wade in his divorce. Now, before he came into court to testify, one of the defense attorneys, one of the lead defense attorneys, was in touch with him. And there's a series of texts between defense counsel and this guy, Terrence Bradley. And amongst the questions that there's a back and forth with texts were, did Willis and Nathan Wade commence their romantic relationship prior to 2021? Terrence Bradley texts back, quote, absolutely, close quote. Now, on the stand, when he's showing these texts, and says, well, sir, you said that the relationships, when asked if it started before 2021, you responded, absolutely. On the stand, it's almost laughable. He says, well, I was just speculating. Oh, really? Oh, really? Now, it goes further. Defense counsel had submitted, or prepared, I should say, a draft motion to dismiss the case. And in her pleading, in draft form, she had sent it to this guy, Terrence Bradley, to get his take. Was it accurate? And in that motion to dismiss, she had laid out the chronology about when Willis and Wade engaged in their romantic relationship, when he got hired, and all of the timeline and the chronology. Defense counsel sends it to Bradley and says, what do you think? And his response is, it looks good to me. The next day she files it. And when asked about that, he said, again, I was just speculating, I was just guessing. And that doesn't really stand up, in my view, to any serious assessment of this guy's credibility. He didn't want to be there. He had tried to wriggle off the hook saying that everything he might have testified to was protected under the attorney-client privilege. The judge had an in-chambers discussion with this guy, Bradley, and his attorney. The judge concluded that Terrence Bradley was attempting to improperly invoke the attorney-client privilege, and he was compelled to testify. So you got Bradley, before he's on the stand, saying absolutely in terms of when their relationship began, romantic relationship between Willis and Wade began. You've got Willis's quote-unquote good friend who testified that this romantic relationship started in 2019. Okay, and then Will, my friend anymore. Well, duh. But the facts don't look good for what Willis and Wade are claiming. Now, assuming the judge does not believe Willis or Wade and thinks that the testimony of Bradley was not credible, I mean, the judge, I think, at the very least, will ultimately take Willis and Wade off the case. Do I think the judge will then dismiss the case in its entirety? I don't think so, not at this point. I think that certainly some other individuals from within the DA's office could then take the case over, or the judge might require outside counsel to come in, like special counsel, someone from outside of the DA's office to be, like, if you will, the special prosecutor, who would have to make an independent assessment of whether this case was worthy of going forward. Certainly, the next layer of scrutiny this case was going to get was the extent of the coordination, if any, between Willis's DA office and the U.S. Attorney's office and/or the White House, which would be improper. But it really doesn't look like it's going well for Willis and Nathan Wade as the testimony is laying out. I think Willis has real credibility problems. I mean, she was so belligerent and argumentative and antagonistic on the stand. I can't imagine she made a good impression on the judge who's going to make the ultimate determination. It was an interesting day, but for this lawyer Bradley to suddenly say that everything that he affirmed with defense counsel was now simply a speculation, I don't think the judge is going to buy it, John.
Tim Dodd, it was, first of all, it was interesting to see that it seems that these two, Wade and Bradley, thought that they would forever be protected by attorney-client privilege. That was not the case. It was also interesting to see the defense, one right after another. I don't remember the last time I've seen that many attorneys get to question a witness in that ma in this manner. But it's not over yet. But just for people to understand, Tim Dodd, it certainly seems that Wade is not any type of special legal practice that he would assist with this. It sure seems that she brought him, hired him. They had a relationship, and then with the money she would pay him, they would then go on these vacations. I mean, that's the way it came off.
Oh, yeah. And this guy, Nathan Wade, might be a fine attorney, but he has no experience, or at least extensive experience, in prosecuting this type of very complex case against, what is it, 17 or 19 defendants. He's got no track record, from what I understand, in prosecuting this type of matter. And the further question is, weren't there people in the DA's office already on staff who would have been capable of taking lead and prosecuting this case? Why did they have to go outside of the DA's office, hire a guy at a very high hourly rate? It's not like having a salaried employee of the DA's office who was essentially inexperienced in this type of prosecution. And that all undercuts. If she had hired some master prosecutor who had handled these types of cases before, you might say, well, it makes sense. But to hire a guy who didn't have the appropriate background and experience in trying these types of cases would lead you to really scratch your head and say, what's going on here? So the optics are bad, the facts are bad, the innuendo is bad, the timeline is bad. It's all bad for Fannie Willis at this point. At the very least, it looks like President Trump and the co-defendants might get a significant delay in this thing ever going to trial. I just don't know if this judge would have the intestinal fortitude to dismiss this case in its entirety, based upon the testimony that's coming out. I do think that ultimately Willis and Wade, and maybe this guy Bradley, might be referred to disciplinary counsel because it doesn't appear like they're testifying truthfully. It doesn't appear that way, while they're under oath.
Folks, quick break. Much more ahead, our legal expert, attorney Tim Dodd, right here on the John DePietro Show. Do you need a good plumber? I found the best plumber, JMB Plumbing. Call them today. All your plumbing needs, 401-662-5400. 743-9153. JMB Plumbing. They've been providing plumbing services for years. Skilled professionals stand behind their work. Guarantee you will be happy. Maybe it's repairing damaged water pipes, repair clogged pipelines, maybe replace a water heater, as well as all your plumbing needs. Call them now. It's JMB Plumbing, 401-743-9153. Nothing throws off your life or your home or your business. When you need plumbing service, you need someone reliable, someone who's professional, someone who'll handle the job and do it right. It's JMB Plumbing. Call them today. 401-743-9153, JMB Plumbing, and look for them on Facebook. We're speaking with our legal expert, it's attorney Tim Dutt. Tim, the Karen Reed defense team. Karen Reed case was supposed to start coming up mid-March. And the defense has seemingly been pushing for a delay. And the judge who's been pretty firm in this, Judge, it does seem now, based on this amount of documents they're receiving, that it does seem that the trial for now is delayed at least another month until April.
Yeah, so the case was supposed to start. They were supposed to start impaneling a jury. I believe it was on March 12th. The prosecutors have, within the recent days, dumped about 3,100 pages of material, which is correspondence and communications between the DA's office and the U.S. Attorney's office. So the defense says, look, we just had 3,100 pages of material dumped on us. We think much of it appears to be exculpatory. We need time to review this. The judge says, okay, I'll put the trial over to April 16th. Defense says, judge, that's not enough time to go through 31 pages of material and to vet it and to see what we can do in terms of corroborating it or undercutting it. It's not enough time. For the moment, the judge says, well, that's very interesting, but we're going to start on April 16th. It would seem to me that this case would have to get pushed back even further than April 16th, because in addition to this 3,100 pages of material, both sides are still waiting for further DNA results. We do know that the prosecution has made a point of a press release indicating that there's no evidence of dog DNA that was found on the victim here. They're releasing that to undercut the defense theory, which has been widely circulated, that the decedent's injuries were sustained in part from an attack by the homeowners. I think it was a German Shepherd.
Yep.
Further, there's... a suggestion that hair was found embedded into the cracked taillight of Karen Reed's SUV. For whatever reason, beyond me, why it's taken this long to get a DNA result of that hair sample. Clearly, if that hair that was embedded in her cracked taillight is the hair of the decedent in this matter, now, that's not going to be good news for the Reed team. Why we haven't gotten that, you know, a couple of years down the line, I don't have an explanation why it's taking so long. The prosecution also made a big point of announcing that material consistent with the cracked taillight was found allegedly on the decedent's person, fragments of plastic material consistent with the material that composes the cracked taillight. Is that scientific? Is that forensic? Or is that just the DA making that report? I don't know. Certainly, that would require expert testimony to match the plastic that's alleged, the little pieces of plastic allegedly found on the victim, and corroborating that that material came from this vehicle and from no other source. the case keeps getting curiouser and curiouser in terms of evidence that seems to be popping up out of nowhere. Again, we've said it many times, but the defense can put forth all of these theories about dogs scratching the guy and all this is from a dog. It's nice to put that out there in the press, but it's a different thing if you try to prove or disprove or introduce evidence
Right.
to corroborate the facts you're trying to put forward. I think the defense, once they can't argue their case in the press and must argue it to a judge and jury, I think the defense is going to have a real hard time.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Folks, again, we're speaking with our legal expert, attorney Tim Dodd. Tim, the Johnston Sunrise, I give them credit. It's a weekly. They've been doing a good job with this whole element of this accused immigrant case. It's a political hot potato. I'm just curious your thoughts on this. Seems to be this back and forth of, and the headline I think sums it up, matter of state policy, a terrible era. This was the guy that it was unusual that they put out a press release, ICE out of Boston, saying that the Rhode Island authorities had essentially let him go, even though there was a detainer on him. And then it set off a chain of events, a finger pointing between Governor McKee and Attorney General Peter Norona.
Well, it's interesting. ICE popped off with their statement or media press release, whatever it was, excoriating the Department of Corrections and the Sheriff's Department for having this illegal immigrant who was charged with first-degree child molestation somehow get back on the street. Nerona's office was quick to jump in saying, well, this was all the governor's fault because he runs the prisons. The governor's office said, we're not going to say anything till we get our facts straight. And I think that was the smartest thing they could do because what the governor's office ultimately puts out is they got a report from the prison, they got a report from the sheriff's department. And apparently, the sheriff's department knew of this ICE detainer, which was good for 48 hours. And allegedly, the sheriff's department contacts ICE saying, listen, we got this guy. He made bail. There's an ICE detainer. We can hold him for 48 hours if you guys are going to come pick him up. If you're not going to come pick him up within 48 hours, we have no choice under the 2014 detainer policy to let him go. Allegedly, ICE then says, hey, we're short staffed. We don't have enough manpower. We're not going to get to this guy within 48 hours. Sorry. So, having been told we're not going to be showing up to get this guy within the 48-hour window, the man is then put back on the street, having made bail. Now, Nerona's office now, scoff saying, well, it's nice that the governor's office finally gave a response. Well, I think the governor's office was smart to not just jump in and say something for the sake of saying something. They waited to see what all the facts were. And it looks like, in part, ICE having excoriated everyone in Rhode Island, one of the problems was within ICE not having sufficient manpower to come pick this guy up per the rules and per the protocols. So it looks like ICE didn't drop the ball. ICE didn't have the manpower to do their job, which left the prison, excuse me, left the sheriff's office with no choice but to release the guy. And it's not up to the Bureau of Prisons. The Bureau of Prisons says when prisoners are within our purview, behind our walls, we're responsible, but we can't necessarily control what's happening between the sheriff's department and the federal ICE officials. I think ultimately what should be called into question is the continuation of this 2014 policy,
Yep.
which was promulgated by the Chafee
That's
administration.
right.
The Raimondo administration continued it. The McKee administration has done nothing about it. So the real question, it seems to me, for the McKee administration should be, What are you going to do about the 2014 policy?
Right.
You're going to keep it in place so we can have these things happen in the future, or are you going to change it? Other than that, it seems to me that the McKee administration was not culpable in the way that Peter Noronha attempted to suggest, I guess, to score some political points. I think Noronha's office jumped in early before they knew all the facts, trying to impugn the McKee administration. It's everyone pointing fingers at each other for political gain. And this is a one-off terrible situation. But what are we going to do about the 2014 policy? Are we going to change it or not?
Right.
And that's where the focus should be.
Folks, quick break. Much more ahead. Our legal expert, attorney Tim Dodd, right here on the John DePietro Show. AEP Services. They take great pride installing fences of all kinds. Vinyl, wood, aluminum, chain link, experience, quality, integrity. Call AEP Services today for a quality fence, home or business. 401-228-7190. 401-228-7190. Residential fence, commercial fence, steel, wood guard, rail. They have it all. Beautiful aluminum product, decorative landscape. It adds a lot to it for your stunning property. Call the experts today. AEP Services, 401-228-7190. Residential or commercial, why not enjoy your backyard, a little privacy, or maybe keep a pet or young children inside? Remember, they also have fences. They're resilient, water-resistant. Call today, 401-228-7190. Free quote, AEP Services, the fence experts, 401-228-7190. 7190. We're speaking with our legal expert. It's attorney Tim Dodd. Tim, some other legal stories. I'm just curious your thought. Arizona's Republican Party, the GOP, they've advanced a bill legalizing killing undocumented migrants on the suspicion of trespassing. This is a legitimate story. Axios broke it. Now, again, you know, this is something that's being introduced. I'm just wondering if something like that could ever stand legal muster if it continued to advance?
Well, Arizona is one of the very hot spots for illegals to enter the United States.
Yep.
Arizona, in many ways, is bearing the brunt of this illegal entry into our country from folks from all over the world. It might sound good for political purposes for the proponents of this bill to say if somebody's trespassing on your property and they're here illegally, you should be able to shoot them. Well, what's the difference between someone who's here illegally trespassing on your property and a citizen trespassing on your property?
Right.
What makes it okay to shoot one and not to shoot the other?
Yep.
To me, it's a due process violation. It's really idiotic, John. It's never going to stand up to any judicial scrutiny. It's going to be potentially a bill that makes it through the legislature in Arizona. It's doomed to be vetoed by the Democrat governor of the state. And if the governor vetoes it, I think she would be correct to veto it. It's
yeah.
It's something that maybe feels good. Maybe it gets certain state officials or state elected officials in Arizona some oomph or some traction because people are so upset about this illegal entry into the country. But the bill as proposed might make citizens or these legislators feel good, but it's never going to stand up to judicial scrutiny. It's a waste of time, and it makes the Arizona Republicans look like a bunch of yahoos.
Yeah. Tim Dodd, with President Trump now files to overturn that civil fraud judgment, how long does this then go on where then he's going to try to battle it to get it overturned, do you think?
Well, he's got at least two bites at the apple. My understanding, it goes to an appellate court in New York, and ultimately, depending on the ruling there, can be further appealed to the New York Supreme Court. after the New York Supreme Court, it would be a real question mark whether this would ever be taken to the U.S. Supreme Court. I don't think the Supremes would take it up. I'm not sure there's an appropriate federal issue or issue of constitutional law which would get it to the point that the Supreme Court would take it on a writ of certiorari. Can Trump do something in these two reviewing courts? Potentially. It seems like the amount of the fine is a crazy number. But as we've discussed before, when it's a trial with a judge sitting without a jury, reviewing appellate courts give great weight to the judge's fact finding. And reviewing courts are typically resistant to stepping in and reversing based upon the judge's fact finding, unless that fact finding is clearly wrong, or unless the judge has improperly applied the law to the facts as the judge has determined them. So it's a tough hurdle to get this thing overturned. Might a reviewing court say the judge got it all right, but the judge was wrong in the amount of the civil fines, and might the judge have got it wrong with, determining that a special master should be put in to run the Trump businesses, and Trump should be stopped from doing business for in New York for like 3 years. I think the sanctions that this judge imposed are out of whack with whatever the fact finding might have been, and that's up to a reviewing court. And all the while, Trump still has to either post bond for now, it's over $400 million, or pledge properties and or cash in some combination sufficient to pledge, so that while this thing is on appeal, he's got property pledged. Now, if he wins his appeal, he gets all those properties or back. If he loses, the state has assets already on the table that it can take and liquidate to satisfy whatever the ultimate fine might be. So, Trump's taking an appeal does not stop his requirement to post money or cash or a bond totaling now well over $400 million, which, and Trump asked for a delay to put together assets, bond in or cash to post within the 30-day period, and the judge, not surprisingly, denied Trump's request. So Trump's going to scramble now, or Letitia James says, well, if he doesn't post, we'll just start grabbing his properties and liquidating them.
Tim Dodd,
So it's a
what
t tough row to hoe for Trump.
it is. What are we to make of that Peter Norona's office, the Rhode Island, suing these landlords over these unsafe housing? There seems to just be far more of a spotlight put on a lot of landlords.
Well, there's a real push in the General Assembly in the House to, there's a number of bills pending to give tenants more rights and to put more obligations on landlords in terms of lead mitigation, lead reporting, notice to tenants, and increasing the ability of tenants to withhold rent if they're going to apply that rent to making repairs. Necessary repairs that landlords refuse to make. So there's a real popular push to strengthen the hand that tenants have to play. Peter Norona has jumped in through his office to go after this particular landlord who allegedly has properties that this landlord rents that have serious violations regarding failure to mitigate lead and other issues that could be dangerous to tenants. Now, it's one thing to file suit and to get a headline. It's another thing to prove your case. Right now, the landlord here is not just laying down. The landlord here is pushing back, saying, listen, before Noronha filed, this is from the defense perspective, their counsel says before Noronha sued, we had no code violations, and all of the units in question were lead compliant. Now, that's what defense counsel says for media consumption. I don't know what the real facts are, but, you know, when somebody is sued, they've got the right to defend themselves and push back. So when the news media is saying, why hasn't this case been concluded yet? Well, it's because we go through the pretrial discovery process. I mean, it's one thing to make allegations, as we know, and it's another thing to prove them. So Noronha's office has had this case going for months and months and months and has not been able to force through the judicial process, have been able to force his landlord to do what the plaintiff, State of Rhode Island, thinks the landlord should be required to do. And everything the state thinks the landlord should be required to do, the landlord's saying, no, I don't. And that's the nature of litigation. So it hasn't concluded yet.
Tim Dodd, finally, this story really took off out of Boston, where you have this this restaurant called Table in the North End. And they have a pretty strict reservation policy, which is 72-hour cancellation notice. If you don't cancel before then, and there's this one particular individual, he was coming into Boston apparently to see the see Madonna, and the train was running late. So it's automatically, they have two large tables. It's each person that eats there, it's $125. So they get charged. They try to cancel 6 hours ahead of time. They get charged. It was he and his husband, $250. He goes to try to fight it. It turned out that he had booked the reservation on his credit card. So then he was essentially insured for it, but he disputed the claim. But it's drawing attention to the legality of some of these cancellation notices.
Well, many restaurants have a cancellation policy. Many resorts have a cancellation policy. I'm not really sure the enforceability of it, but I know, for instance, I can analogize many of the better restaurants, let's say, in Disney World. Have a cancellation policy. If you book and you don't cancel within a certain time frame, you're charged, I don't know, $25 or $50 or whatever the amount is. It's always going up. And at the time that you make that reservation, there's a notice, I believe. It's either verbal if you do it on the phone or if you do it electronically, that boom, there's a cancellation policy, and by booking, you're acknowledging the cancellation policy, and you're acknowledging that if you don't show up or cancel within X number of hours, that you're going to be charged. So I don't know at this juncture, this restaurant in question, how they articulated their cancellation policy and what transpired either verbally or electronically that the person booking the table is on notice and agrees to the cancellation policy. So, you know, we know that there's the policy. We know that this guy's upset, but I'm not sure at this point what notice he was provided and what notice he agreed to. And that to me would tell the tale of whether this is enforceable or not. Cancellation charges are clearly widespread and, to my knowledge, typically enforceable if they are properly noticed and properly agreed to.
Folks, again, he is our legal expert. It's attorney Tim Dodd. Tim, excellent job as always, and we'll talk to you again.
Thanks, John. Take care.
AJ, drywall, plaster, home improvement, call them today for a free quote. You can also find them on Facebook, 401-323-9252. 323-9252. AJ, drywall, plasters, home improvement, frame to finish, basements. What a difference it'll make in your basement. Acoustic ceilings. Look how beautiful your ceiling could be. New homes, additions. Also, commercial rehabs, painting, remodeling. contact them today. It's a family-run business. AJ Drywall, Plaster, Home Improvements. Call for a free quote. What a difference they'll make in your home, your ceilings, floors, basements. 401-323-9252. What a difference. Beautiful walls and ceilings. 401-323-9252. You can also find them on Facebook. It's AJ Drywall, Plaster, and Home Improvements for your home or business. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Well, I can tell you in Georgia, the topic of illegal immigration remains very, very strong. Now, where we are, our part of the world, both Massachusetts Governor, Governor Healey, continues to allow Massachusetts to basically operate as sanctuary state. Certainly Governor McKee won't admit it, but he does the same. But I can tell you that certainly things are still just absolutely, people are just so angry what happened with the death of Lakin Riley, the nursing student at a nearby school. I want to pick up the latest with World News Tonight.
The case of the nursing student killed while running on the University of Georgia campus, how the suspect allegedly tried to conceal her death amid major questions now about why he was in this country. Steve Osunsami in Georgia again tonight.
In arrest records, prosecutors say that this 26-year-old from Venezuela accused of murder on the University of Georgia campus did conceal the death of 22-year-old Lakin Riley by dragging the victim to a secluded area. Riley was a cross-country runner at her old high school in the Atlanta suburbs and was a nursing student at a school near UGA when she was out running near this lake and was killed. Jose Ibarra is in a Georgia jail charged with murder tonight, and his story is adding fuel to the fire over immigration.
Mr. Ibarra has been charged with malice murder, felony murder, aggravated battery.
It's now a year and a half after authorities first arrested him for crossing the southern U.S. border unlawfully. And in that same time, federal officials say he was also arrested in New York City for a motor vehicle license violation, acting in a manner to injure a child less than 17. He was released each time. He and his brother were living in an apartment building near jogging trails where Riley was killed. Prosecutors say Ibarra prevented her from making a 911 call and used an object to kill her.
This was a crime of opportunity where he saw an individual and bad things happen.
Unrelated to the murder, the suspect's brother was also arrested for having a fake green card. And the university is announcing more than $7 million in security upgrades, including better lighting and more cameras. David Stevos.
You know, this is, now granted that happened and they're dealing with it. You think just how ferocious that is. She went out for a run, and then this sex-crazed murderer sees her and attacks her. I just want to play the beginning again where they talk about then trying to conceal her death. She was trying to call 911.
Prosecutors say that this 26-year-old from Venezuela accused of murder on the University of Georgia campus did conceal the death of 22-year-old Lakin Riley by dragging the victim to a secluded area. Riley was a cross-country runner at her old high school in the Atlanta suburbs and was a nursing student at a school near UGA when she was out running near this lake and was killed. Jose Ibarra is in a Georgia jail charged with murder tonight, and his story is adding fuel to the fire.
You know, what an absolute disgrace. Plus, she was trying to call 911, and then he just murdered her. I mean, it's just so... But folks, closer to home, people like Governor McKee and Matos, they're not doing anything to try to keep you safe or keep us safe. And then I watched some of that hearing, the embarrassing Fannie Willis. That woman has no business at all in Atlanta trying to go after President Trump. I want to dip into this. The key witness.
DA Fannie Willis fights to stay on this case against Donald Trump in Georgia. Here's Aaron Katursky.
What an embarrassment
she is. For more than 2 hours today, attorneys for Donald Trump and his co-defendants in Georgia tried to prove District Attorney Fannie Willis lied about her romance with the man she hired to run the case, grilling a key witness, the former law partner of Special Prosecutor Nathan Wade, about the timing of the relationship. But Terrence Bradley testified repeatedly he did not know.
When did the relationship start?
I cannot answer that. I don't know when the relationship started.
at that point, had they begun their romantic relationship?
I don't recall any specific dates.
Bradley was confronted with his own text messages saying the romance started before Willis hired Wade.
And when I asked you if you thought it started before she hired him, and you responded, absolutely.
But today, Bradley said in those texts, he was only speculating.
Why would you speculate when she was asking you a direct question about when the relationship started?
I have no answer for that.
Except for the fact that you do, in fact, know when it started, and you don't want to testify to that in court.
No, I have no direct knowledge of when the relationship started.
Bradley's inconsistent account raises questions, since Willis and Wade testified their romance began after he started working on the Trump case.
In November of 2021, I hired him. I do not consider our relationship to have become romantic until early of 2022.
The timing of the relationship is critical. To get Fani Willis kicked off the case, the defense would have to prove she profited by hiring Wade. David, the judge is going to hear final arguments about all this on Friday. David?
She absolutely should be kicked off. These people are an embarrassment. I think she will be kicked off. She has no credibility left in this. To watch and follow any of this is so unseemly. I think she's going to get kicked off. That postpones any type of trial. This woman has absolutely no business being in that position of power. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Propane Plus. Call them today. Heating and cooling in Rhode Island, 401-885-4209. In Massachusetts, 508-252-3359. For Propane Plus. Three generations you can always depend on Propane Plus for all your heating and cooling. Call them today, 401-885-4209. Three generations, they're available 24/7 for service and delivery, and they're going to serve you for a very long time. They have a great user-friendly website. You just log on at propaneplus.com, and then you type in your zip code, residential, commercial, Propane Plus. Heating and cooling, always there for you. Give them a call today. In Rhode Island, 401-885-4209. In Massachusetts, 508-252-3359. The Johnson family, three generations. Heating and cooling, you can always depend on Propane Plus. Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. Lunch, dinner, drinks in the lounge, especially this time of year. So much going on. They always have a nice crowd right there. Full bar, large dining area right there in the lounge. Easy to get to, whether it's lunch or dinner. A great meal is waiting for you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery. Think of this, since 1994. That's right, celebrating the big anniversary this year. I'll see you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. Check out DePietro.com, DePietro.com, all our links to social media, exclusive stories and videos waiting for you at DePietro.com.